Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is The Tech Guy with Leo Laporte, episode 743 for Saturday, February 12th, 2011. Enjoy.
Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, and it's time to talk about, tech, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all of that stuff. We do this every week at this time, and I have to say, it's so much fun, because there's always something new, something interesting to talk about. I will be getting to your phone calls in just a little bit. Interesting, did you see, I didn't see it, but I hear that... fascinating, actually, that IBM created a machine, they called it Watson, to play Jeopardy. Did you see that? He won, right? The computer won. Now, at first you might think, oh, well, of course the computer won, because the computer has kind of an infinite capacity to store facts. So what's the big deal? Any worthwhile computer is going to know the answer to every Jeopardy question. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. Ray Kurzweil, who is an amazing researcher, artificial intelligence expert at MIT, he created the first speech synthesis programs, text-to-speech programs, dictation programs. He even made the synthesizer that Stevie Wonder uses. He also wrote a book in the mid-1980s. Called The Age of Intelligent Machines. He predicted in that book in 1984, 85, that a computer would be better than a human at chess by 1998, in roughly 15 years. He said, I based my estimate on a very simple law, the law of the exponential growth of computing power. And he figured that a computer would be good enough to beat the best humans in about 15 years. You know what? He missed by 1 year. It was a year earlier, in 1997, instead of 1998, that Deep Blue, that IBM machine, defeated Garry Kasparov and became the best chess player in the world. Now, a lot of humans pointed out that, oh, well, come on, anybody can, any computer could beat chess because chess is completely rational and it's just a, question of, it's not human thinking, it's just a question of calculation. Computers are very good calculators. Kurzweil says, I don't think so. I don't entirely disagree with this view of computer game playing. In fact, computers early on did well with mathematical theorems and things like that. But they're getting better at thinking, and this is evidence of it. And the best evidence, he says, is this new computer, Watson, that won Jeopardy. He said, that's not easy. Because Jeopardy, first of all, you have to kind of parse the question. Now, a human's very good at understanding a Jeopardy question. Actually, it's Jeopardy answer, isn't it? Because you have to come up with the question. But for a computer to kind of understand the puns, the jokes, the kind of context of a Jeopardy answer, and then form a question around it, it's kind of showing some human thought capabilities. That's pretty impressive. He said, yeah, it's Jeopardy, but it's even, it's even maybe more impressive than chess. For instance, Kurzweil says, when a human contestant, Ken Jennings, the best undefeated Jeopardy player, right? Ken Jennings selects the Chicks Dig Me category. He makes a joke that is outside the formal game by saying, I've never said that on TV, Chicks Dig Me. Well, Watson then says, let's finish Chicks Dig Me. The audience gets a laugh, by the way. Now, Watson isn't It's pretty clear Watson is not does not know he's made a joke. It's an inadvertent joke. And so we're not saying that the computer is actually capable of writing comedy. But the whole point of artificial intelligence is to make a computer that is indistinguishable from a human. It doesn't matter whether the computer knows it's funny. If it's funny, it's funny. I think it's very intriguing. Now, by the way, Watson did not win, right? What was the, was it close? I didn't see it. But it's fascinating that a computer can get that close. Watson didn't win. I missed the show. But the fascinating that he could even play. And at some point, now look, computers could not beat even mediocre chess players like me for many, many years, but eventually they did. And it did win the test round, so it's not completely inept. What does this achievement with Jeopardy tell us about the prospect of computers passing what's called the Turing test, Kurzweil asks? Turing test is that basically a test that was devised by computer scientist Alan Turing that would, you know, kind of be a landmark. If a computer could pass this test, well, it would be indistinguishable from a human. And Kurzweil says, well, Watson demonstrates the very rapid progress being made on human language understanding. Carnegie Mellon University has something called the Read the Web Project, which has created NELL, N-E-L-L, stands for Never Ending Language Learner. It's reading documents on the web and apparently understanding them. I find it fascinating. I don't think we're going to see HAL 9000 anytime soon. Kurzweil, by the way, does. He thinks in our lifetime we're going to see computers that are indistinguishable from humans. But they're certainly making some progress. And, you know, let's just remember that for a long time, nobody ever thought a computer could beat the grandmasters of chess, and they have. For a long time, nobody thought a computer could play Jeopardy and compete, and it has. I think it's a fascinating field. What do you think? Will computers ever be? Notice he doesn't say as smart as humans. That's not the test. Indistinguishable from humans. And are there things computers can do we can't and vice versa? Are there things, and this is a more interesting question, a human can do that a computer can't? We're finding out it's very difficult for computers to understand handwriting and speech, much more difficult than we thought. And yet when I talk to the scientists, I talked to Mike Cohen, who is an engineer at Google responsible for their speech recognition. And I said, I've heard, you know, that this is an intractable problem that can't be solved. The computers will never be able to understand human speech. He said, oh, don't bet on that. He feels very confident that we're not so far off. Somebody in the chat room, Mac Photo Guy, says, I want a HAL 9000. Would it be cool, but it would be a little creepy, wouldn't it? If the computer talked back to you. But that's the ultimate interface. We saw it in 2001. Didn't happen in 2001. Here we are 10 years past 2001. It still hasn't happened. But wouldn't you love to be able to say, computer, yes. Would you make me a cheese sandwich? Certainly, Leo. Would you like mustard with that? Yes, please. Computer, yes. Call my mom. But Leo, don't forget her birthday is coming up. Thank you. Actually, it's not so far from what my Android phone does, except for the birthday part. And it's getting pretty close. maybe we are getting there. So that's the kind of thing we talk about. Usually I talk about, frankly, the stuff we can do. But every once in a while, it's kind of interesting to talk about the stuff we can't yet do, but may soon be able to do. And I thought that was very interesting that IBM could create a computer, Watson, that could actually play credibly. The test round it won, it didn't win on TV. Hey, that's, you know, even Ken Jennings can't win all the time. Or can he? I guess he can. Let's get to the phones in just a little bit. Our website is techguylabs.com. That's where you'll see, I'll put a link to this article, this Kurzweil article. It's really, you know, very interesting stuff. It's from PC Magazine. In our website, techguylabs.com. And I'm here to help. answer your calls, answer your questions. We're going to go to the phones in just a bit on The Tech Guy Show. I am Leo Laporte,
The Tech Guy.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get back to the phones here with Robin in Westminster, California. Robin, you're next. Leo Laporte here.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. We've been on the hunt for a flat screen TV. I was wondering if you had any recommendations. Vizio keeps popping up a lot, but I don't know the quality of that. We're looking for maybe like 47-inch LCD.
The nice thing about Vizio is, besides it's available everywhere, including warehouse stores, is it's very affordable. It's a second-tier company. So the big names are, you know, Sharp, Panasonic, LG, I'm sure I'm missing, if Sony. Those are all the highest quality. And then there's a second tier down, and Vizio is the best of the second tier. I would say, if your price is a sensitive subject, as it often is, these are expensive boxes, then a Vizio is a good choice.
We're looking at spending about $900 and something, maybe where the kids could hook up one of their gaming systems on it.
Yeah.
So would that be decent?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Samsung I left out as another top tier, and my personal favorite is actually Samsung. You know, I think you could go to the store with your $900 in hand. 47 inches is pretty small. You should have a good choice in that price range of 47-inch displays. Vizio is excellent. Samsung is excellent. I would stay with LCD, not plasma, just because it's going to be brighter. It's better, you know, for the living room.
Okay. Because we had actually bought a 47 Samsung, brought it home, hooked it up, and the picture was really horrible. Packaged it.
Really?
Back. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we were really surprised. We didn't know if it was just that particular brand or, you know, model.
No, Samsung's very good. It must have been the model. I have to say, you know, Samsung, like many manufacturers, has kind of a high end and a low end. And I suppose at the price point you're going, maybe you got the low end set. Where you'll notice the difference, you know, most DVDs will look good. Blu-ray will look great on almost any set. The less expensive sets tend not to do well with standard definition. They don't do as good a job upscaling the lower quality images. So you're watching I Love Lucy, it actually looks worse because you're watching it on this big screen and high resolution, and what you're seeing is what I Love Lucy looked like. It's just we never noticed it on these older TVs. I'm not sure why it looked bad. What was it about the picture that you didn't like?
Actually, it was my husband and my son were setting it up, and they turned it on. They said you could see squares or something.
Yeah, pixelation. That's probably was on standard definition content. That's exactly what you'd see.
Oh, okay. So
the 47 inches is fairly small. Most stuff should look pretty good on it. You also, by the way, when you get it out of the box, you're not done. You want to actually make some adjustments to make it look as good as possible. Were you hooking it up to cable, to satellite? What were you hooking it up to?
Yeah, up to Dish. Yes.
Dish.
We didn't hook up the HD hookup to it at that point.
That's why.
Oh yeah.
Ironically, when you have a better TV, you need better signal coming in, or it's not going to look good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So my recommendation is save some of that money, buy that nice 47-inch screen, but also get a good DVD player with an HDMI, and what they call an upscaling DVD player, or better yet, a Blu-ray player. You can get good Blu-ray players for $100, $150 now, and that will give you the best signal going into the TV, and that's where the TV is going to look the best.
Okay, and what about the LED? I think that's...
Yeah, so these are all LCDs, but it's how they're lit. You definitely, if you're getting an LCD, want an LED backlit, as opposed to the fluorescent backlit TVs, the older TVs. LED looks a lot better.
Okay, great. Great, so much. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. And, yeah, take a look at it in the store. Make sure it looks good. before you buy. I suspect it was just the bad signal going in. I think Samsung makes very good sets. But if you put a, if you not, you got to use HD if you can. And if you're looking at standard def, by the way, you'll also have to go to Dish and say, I want the high def signals. You got to upgrade not just the TV, but the stuff going into the TV to see the best benefit. And I have to think that the less expensive TVs are not going to do quite as good a job upscaling, that is smoothing out the jaggies on lower quality content, the S, what we call standard definition, low quality content. Like I Love Lucy, The Honeymooners, stuff like that. Joanne in Running Springs, California. Hi, Joanne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Well, hi, it's Joni. And
I'm sorry. Hi, Joni.
Watching the snow come down. I have a Toshiba Satellite P305 laptop, and it appears that the battery is going bad, so I've been hooking it up to AC all the time, and now my connection from, you know, the plug into the computer is all kaflooey.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I wanted to know if there's something I'm doing wrong. It's not snug anymore, and it doesn't stay connected.
Pretty old laptop, I'm thinking.
June of 09.
Well, that's not old at all.
Exactly.
Why, it's not even 2 years old yet.
Precisely.
Well, that's a little disappointing. The batteries usually last a couple of years. The way a lithium-ion battery on a laptop works is you get a certain number of charge cycles, usually 500 or more, which usually, I mean, that's unless you are using it an awful lot, that's a couple of years. So the battery died prematurely. It now sounds like the cable connection is either damaged. Sometimes, you know, this is why Apple made these MagSafe connectors, which are just little magnets. And if you trip over the cable, it just pulls the magnet off. Because the older cables that you plug deep into the computer, if you trip over that cable, and I suspect that this might have happened, it's going to bend that plug. It's going to be loose. It's going to be weird. It may not work very well. So I think Toshiba laptops are kind of not noticed, known for the robustness of their AC connectors to begin with, and I think it might have just in the over the period of 18 months, hard to believe, just gotten looser and looser. Not worth fixing. Is it staying in?
No, it's not snug at all anymore.
It's just falling right out.
Exactly, and I'm
frustrating,
really distressing because it's a nice. It's a 17 inch. You know, it's a nice computer.
Yeah, yeah, and it's pretty new. Is it still under warranty, or did you only get a one-year warranty?
Well, I'm convinced that I got a two-year warranty, but evidently I didn't register it. And now they need the original receipt in order to register it. So I've got to go digging and find that.
What a stinky company.
Yes, well, yeah.
You know, what? Who cares if you registered it? Is the computer less than 2 years old? Yes.
Yes. Exactly.
So there. Yeah. Fix it.
Where do I
escalate? You know, first of all, if it's not under warranty, it's not going to be worth fixing, because fixing those things requires probably a new motherboard. They're attached to the motherboard, so it's a very expensive fix, more expensive than the computer's worth, to be honest.
Okay.
So what you need to do is pursue that warranty, and what I would do is just escalate it. I'd go higher up. Don't talk to that, you know, say, I want to talk to your supervisor. And if worst case scenario, write to the office of the president of Toshiba Corporation and say, I was just on the radio and Leo said you stink. Because they really ought to. I mean, look, it's under warranty. It's less than 2 years old. That's under warranty.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm sorry, Joni. I hope you stay dry and safe from the snowstorm. I hope you don't get snowed in like our East Coast friends did. Take care of yourself. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazingly low price. Call 866-2-GET-NET to get DSL Extreme. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Scott Wilkinson is our home theater guy. And I have some very good news. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. Scott is the editor-in-chief of the Ultimate AV Magazine at ultimateavmag.com. He also is a columnist at Home Theater Magazine, has been one of the premier reviewers of home theater out there, and been a regular on this show for a long time. And because I'm going to be taking a little time off next month, Scott has agreed to fill in for me, which I am thrilled. Couldn't be more happy to tell everybody. So,
well, thank you, Leo. I'm honored and privileged to have been asked to do that. And I know I can sit in for you, but I could never fill your shoes.
Oh, don't be silly. As soon as you do this, everybody's going to say, why aren't you just, let's just have a home theater show.
Yeah.
So it will be a home theater weekend, the 5th and 6th.
Whole weekend, yeah. 5th and 6th of February, yep.
5th and 6th.
From the cottage, in fact.
Yeah, you're going to come up here to the Tech Guy Labs, and that way John can make you some nice coffee. You can relax. You can sit on the ball. No, we'll get you a chair. We'll get you a chair. Don't worry. You don't have to sit on the ball. So what is going on in the world of home theater?
Well, there's a ton of stuff, actually, as always. I want to hip everybody to my weekly poll question, first of all, on ultimateavmag.com, which this week is, do you suffer from 3D sickness? you know what I'm talking about,
I
right?
do, yeah.
There are a number of people who, when they watch this stereoscopic 3D content, movies or TV, they can get headaches, dizziness, even nausea. And Samsung and Sony and others have even issued warnings. They put warnings in their manuals for these TVs saying, you know, if you're drinking or you're pregnant, hopefully not at the same time, you know, or you are prone to seizures, you probably shouldn't watch 3D TV.
Well, that's no good.
No, it really isn't. And so I was curious. I really have no idea.
Have you ever had this happen to you?
Never.
Never.
I answered this question, never. There are several answers, of course, that you can post, you can click on when you first get to that question. And one of them is never. One of them is always. One of them is sometimes, depending on content. I tend to think that it might be more to do with the active shutter glasses, which actually blink on and off. And I can imagine that might cause more problems than the passive glasses. You remember seeing the passive glasses at CES.
Right.
And they were, in fact...
That's the kind you get in the movie theater.
That's the kind you get in the movie theater, primarily. There are a couple of movie theaters that use active glasses. The Arclight in Hollywood, for example, has what's called an expand theater, and they use the active glasses. And that's pretty rare because those glasses are very expensive.
Yeah.
So the passive glasses, I think, would tend not to make one as sick as the active glasses. But then there's the issue of watching stereoscopic 3D, that is 3D TVs or 3D movies. That's different than actually looking out in the world and seeing 3D. And I believe, I wouldn't be surprised anyway, that the brain responds differently to that than it does to actually looking out in the world. So that may be another factor. So I was just curious to see among the readers what was the deal. And so far, the majority are saying, no, I never have sickness.
Really?
Yeah, exactly. So
no, I get a fatigue, I think, but that's because, you know, I don't have true stereo vision. I have to kind of let my eyes go out of focus a little bit to get the 3D effect. And so I think that's just fatiguing.
That may be. Eye strain or fatigue. Eye fatigue is probably the most common malady, shall we say.
Symptom.
Symptom, yes.
3D-itis.
The most common symptomology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it is of some concern. I mean, if the companies are putting out these warnings, I think they're mostly just covering their legal ass, if you know what I mean. But, you know, there has to be at least something to it. So
right.
I was just curious. So I hope everybody goes and votes in that poll, because I would love to have a large sample to see what it is that might be going on there, if it's a big problem or if it's not.
UltimateAVMag.com. Do you suffer?
Sorry, I was going to say Dr. Mom in the chat room says, in her opinion, Part of the problem is isolation from external visual cues.
Oh, yeah.
If you look away to things that aren't 3D, the nausea goes away. That's right. Kind of interesting.
Right.
And being a doctor, I believe.
Well, that happens with car sickness, you know, is that your inner ear is saying you're moving one way, your eyes say you're moving another way, and it's very confusing and it makes you nauseous. I guess that could be.
Now, you're going on a cruise, right?
Yes.
When you go away?
I will not watch any 3D movies on a cruise. The car sickest I ever got was when I was on a commuter bus playing Quake. So my eyes, I'm looking at Quake, and my eyes are going one way.
Yeah.
My body's going another way. And I just really, whoo, that was bad.
Yeah,
that was
seriously bad.
Yeah.
One thing to do when you're on a ship like that is, I've been told, look at the horizon.
Right. Right.
So that may relate to what.
So
Dr.
maybe
Mama
every
said.
Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that to bring intermissions. Remember, they used to have intermissions in long movies. They'd stop Lawrence of Arabia. They'd stop and they'd play music so you'd go get some popcorn.
Right. And then they'd sing, "Let's all go to the snack bar."
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah.
iDoc Mark in the chat room says, "Go to your optometrist before you get a 3D. Go to a 3D movie or buy a 3D TV.
He'll know if you're going to have a problem."
Yeah, I would guess.
Yeah. Huh.
Now you might as you said, you have a bit of a stereo issue yourself.
I have a strabismus, so I don't use both eyes normally. I use one eye at a time.
Hmm.
But I can resolve both eyes if I go slightly out of focus. If I think about it, and I saw Avatar in the theater, and there were snowflakes popping out at me.
Yeah.
I almost got poked in the eye by a stick when they were running through the forest. Ow.
Right. Exactly right. Yeah.
iDoc Mark says, when I said, so you go to the eye doctor to get a checkup before you go to 3D, is that something you need to do? He says, no, we just need the money. Well, an honest doctor, finally. Yes.
Finally.
We just want the money.
Yeah, we just want the money.
No, he's serious. And I think it probably isn't a bad idea. And I don't know if there's anything they can do about it, but they certainly would know, for instance, go to a 3D movie, that's fine. What are you out, $10? But if before you buy a $3,000 TV, you might want to check.
You know, that makes some sense.
Yeah.
That really does, because that's a significant investment. Unfortunately, 3D movies are a little more than $10 these days, I'm afraid.
Oh, yeah, those IMAX movies, they set you
IMAX back. Movies are probably pushing 20.
Are they really? Wow.
Well, yeah. my friend Tom Norton and I go on Tuesdays when it's a little bit lower. But still, normally it's $15, $18, probably closer to 20 at IMAX, maybe 15 or 16 at a regular 3D type theater. So it is a premium. But still, that's nothing compared to, $2,000 or $3,000 for a 3D TV. You might want to check that out. I've gotten a number of questions about 3D, for example, and projectors, which is kind of interesting. Kevin Horsch asks, he's interested in getting a new Optima projector.
Mm-hmm.
And he's interested. It's odd that some of Optima's 720p projectors are listed as 3D capable, but their HD20, which is their lowest cost 1080p projector, is not. And he wonders, is that normal? Well, it depends on the company and whether or not they want to make the projector 3D capable.
By the way, 3D capable doesn't mean 3D, does it? What is 3D ready? What is 3D capable? We only have about 30 seconds. Maybe I asked you a question.
And it's probably a little too short to explain it in detail. Yeah. But it just means that it if you send it a 3D signal from a Blu-ray player, it'll show it.
Okay.
As opposed to not. And the 720p projectors, I know they've set up to be 3D ready or 3D capable with active glasses, mostly for gaming. And they're relatively inexpensive projectors. And the HD20, which I have reviewed, they decided not to. It's under $1,000. It's the least expensive 1080p projector you can get, but they just decided, not to make it to make it 3D.
We're long gone, by the way. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Nod 32. If you you use Windows, you need Nod 32. And if you use a Mac, now there's cybersecurity for the Mac. all from ESET, ESET.com/Mac. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Dan in, is it Israel? Wow. Hey, Dan, Leo Laporte here. Thanks for calling and thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. We talked actually about a month ago.
I remember, yeah.
And I told you I'd done an app in App Inventor.
Mm-hmm.
And I redid it in Java. And
okay. So what's the name of it?
It's called SMS Location.
SMS Location?
Mm-hmm.
And where can I get it?
The easiest way is probably to go to my blog, and there's a big QR code that you can scan.
Awesome. What's the name of the, what's the website?
Brassnet.wordpress.com.
B-R-A-S-S-N-E-T. Did I hear that right?
That is correct.
Brassnet.wordpress.com. Well, that's cool. Well done. And what does it do?
It sends an SMS with your location, either address, coordinates, or link to Google Maps.
I like that. It's a good idea. You know, there's a great program called Glimpse. Have you seen Glimpse?
I don't think so.
Glympse. It's for iPhone and Android phones. It's kind of cool. If you are on your way somewhere, you can text people with a live link to a Google map that has an icon for you and shows you as you approach. It's, since I'm always late for everything, I say, sorry, I'm running late on my way. And I send them this Glimpse. You can email it or text it to them. And they click the link on their smartphone and they can watch as you, you know, they know where you are. The only thing that's a little embarrassing, the last time I did that, I was late for an appointment at Google and I got lost. And I just could feel them watching me wander, trying to find my way. And I thought, this is, okay, maybe this is a little too much information. A little too much. Well, that's good. So you wrote this in Java, and it runs on Android?
It runs on Android.
Yeah, yeah. Well, is this your first app?
It's the first app.
Congratulations. That's exciting. Thanks. How does it feel?
It feels good.
Yeah, I bet it does. That's really neat, Dan. Congratulations.
But that's not why I called.
Okay.
I've been interviewing as a defense contractor.
Right.
And working as a defense contractor in Israel, at least, means that you can't have a camera phone.
You know, it's interesting because that's true in a lot of places. I'm sure that's true in the U.S. Pentagon. I think there are a lot of places you can't bring a camera with you. And my goodness, every smartphone in the world has a camera. In fact, most phones of any kind nowadays have a camera.
Which is why I was going to ask if you know of a smartphone that doesn't have a camera.
Yeah, I think BlackBerry makes some because BlackBerry is widely used in government. So BlackBerry makes a phone that doesn't have a camera on it for exactly this purpose. Chat room, any idea? Some other smartphones. I don't know of any Android phones that don't have cameras. And I bet you, given that you're an Android app writer, that you would very much like an Android phone. The BlackBerry is the only one, because BlackBerry is so widely used in these environments, it's the only one I know of. I'll see if I can find one that's an Android for you, Dan. These are kind of specialized because increasingly, it's very interesting, the phone market has changed. Increasingly, people are buying their own phones and taking them to work. Used to be that the cell phone was a company phone, right? When you got a company phone, well, they dictated the policies. They could disable the camera. They could get phones without a camera. But now people choose their own phone and the company has to make it work with their software and so forth. So I think this has become a big issue. The RIM BlackBerry 6630. I used to have one of those, a curve, right? There may be an Android tablet, but then you couldn't make phone calls. It's an interesting question. I think, absolutely. You go to the Pentagon, you can't bring a camera phone in there. Hey, we're going to take... Thanks for the call, Dan. It's great to know you listen in Israel. Coming up, Eva in Wilmington. She's got a Kodak digital camera and wants to have a timestamp on her photos. How could she do that? Well, maybe we can help. But before I go there, I want to tell you about Nod 32, the great little antivirus that I've talked about so long on Windows. Now ESET, the company that makes Nod 32, has a new antivirus for the Mac. Why do you need one for the Mac? Well, times are changing, and it's probably a good idea to start thinking about this. It's called ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac. Lightweight, so it doesn't slow you down. Very effective. It's got an advanced, they call it a heuristics engine, that watches for virus-like activity and stops it cold. Available at Apple stores nationwide, also Micro Center and Fry's. But one of the things I really like about ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac, they recognize that it's your behavior that's got to change, more important than any software. So it has a built-in free educational component. This would be great to give family and friends, so it teaches them what not to do. And ESET, of course, as always, will, you know, work on your computer without slowing it down. You won't even notice it's running. Effective security. Try it free for 30 days and see what I mean. Go to ESET.com/Mac and give it a free test drive. From the folks who do Nod 32 for Windows, ESET Cybersecurity for the Mac. ESET.com/Mac. Give it a try today. Wilmington, Eva, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eva.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you today?
I love your show, and I'm nervous.
Thank you.
I hope I can explain it.
Oh, it's just you and me, kid. Don't be nervous.
I have an old Kodak DX7630. It's a 6.1 megapixel I've had for many years. And on the menu, I could put the auto date, and I don't have to worry about the date because I personally like to date all my photos.
Right on the image. Okay.
Right. Because I just the way I am. But for Christmas, my husband gave me a Panasonic Lumix ZS5.
Oh, your husband loves you. That's a nice camera.
It sure is, but it doesn't auto-print. And they said I have to do it myself, and it could change the megapixel or the size of it.
I mean, you're talking a 12-megapixel camera. You're talking a beautiful. I actually gave this to my daughter when she graduated from high school to take with her to college to take pictures. She's just loving this camera. It's a great camera.
It is.
Most of the new cameras will no longer let you put time and date stamps on there. And I think the reason is people would call and say, I got all these pictures with the time and the date on it. How do I get rid of them?
Oh, my gosh.
People would turn it on by accident. And if you do that, it's kind of burnt into the image, isn't it?
Yes.
Nowadays, they don't do that. You can, if you wish, process it on your computer and have it put in as a watermark. And I should point out that every photo you take nowadays with a modern camera, the date and time of the actual snapping of the picture is stored in the image. There's in the file itself, there's something called the EXIF. It's an information exchange format that is a standard across all cameras, and it says things like what the shutter speed was, what the aperture size was, what the focal length was. It also says exact date and time it was shot. If you've got geolocation information, it'll go in there. So I think what's happening is that the camera manufacturer is saying, look, we're storing that information. You can't see it. We don't want to burn it into the image because you can't get rid of it. But it's there, and if you want it, there, you can turn that on in a lot of different ways. Do you make prints of every image?
Not every image, but a lot of it. But I do like the dates. My daughter hates them, but I like them. And I have a new grandson, so I like dates.
Yeah, you want the date. Well, I should tell you that it's in there. It's stored in there. If you use a program like Picasa, what do you use when you bring your pictures into your computer? Do you bring them into the computer?
Yes, I use the Kodak software that came with this Kodak camera many years, but I do update it.
Yeah, well, you're not going to want to use that anymore. It won't do a good job with the Panasonic. So
okay.
I would get a program. It's free. Google makes it, called Picasa.
Picasa.
P-I-C-A-S-A, Picasa.com. And Picasa will show you right under the photo, each photo, the exact date and time it was taken. You can add a watermark to a photo that will show, so when you print it, it'll have the date and time on it.
Oh, okay.
So all of that information is still there. I think you'll get used to not having it on the image all the time, Eva.
I know, but in the old days, I used to go print all the dates on the back, writing them, and that got.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Well, this way, it's in the photo. When you print it, you can tell the printer and the software you're using to put it on there. So that way, if you choose, you can have it, but it's not forced. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Laporte here, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. We are talking about computers and the internet and cell phones, home theater, of course, digital photography. In fact, 33 after the hour, Chris Marquardt will join us to talk, do a little camera history. That's going to be fun. Chris is such a great photographer, and it's always fun to talk about digital photography. I'm planning a trip, as you might have heard, next month to South America. I'm going on a geek cruise. That's actually what they call it, geekcruises.com. I think they renamed themselves to Insight Cruises because they realized some people didn't want to hang with geeks, but I do. The cruise is Mac Mania 11, and it's going from Buenos Aires to the Falkland Islands to around Cape Horn. I'm going to get a chance to take a day trip to Antarctica. I'm very excited about that. And back up to Uruguay and Chile. And then I'm going to take a little side trip to Machu Picchu as long as I'm there. I'll go to Peru and visit the Inca ruins there. So I'm really looking forward to it. And naturally, of course, in my mind, I'm thinking, what camera do I bring? Because I don't think it's a pretty fancy trip. I don't think I'll be making my way that way again necessarily anytime soon. I want to get some pictures. Plus, I like to post them on the internet, put them on my Facebook and tweet them, put them on Flickr. So I do have a really good camera, which I'll bring my Canon 5D Mark II. But these digital SLRs with all their lenses are big. I mean, I have a suitcase just for the camera. So I thought it'd be good to have a little pocket camera to carry along with me. Something I can, slip in a pocket of my parka when I'm in Antarctica and get the penguin pictures or whatever. You know, one good start is a phone. Nowadays, especially the iPhone, is a very interesting camera. It's, of course, not a super great camera, although for a phone, it's a pretty good camera. The thing that makes the iPhone interesting is it's got a decent camera. And then it's got a very interesting range of software that you can do stuff with on the phone as you're walking around. I actually have about a dozen iPhone apps, everything from, a Photoshop to a Tilt Shift to something called Color Splash, which lets you make everything black and white except one thing. I've got a geotagger that'll do, keep track of where I am, and I can add that to the photos. Got a couple of panorama applications, a photo booth application. Those photo booths you go in where you get the four pictures, black and white pictures that spit out? Those are fun. A program called Toon Paint I've been playing with a lot. Autodesk Sketchbook, which is a great little drawing program, lets you modify. So there's so many things you can do with these. And then once you've taken the pictures, of course, you've got Facebook on this phone. You've got a program I love called Instagram that lets you share pictures with friends. So there really is a lot of stuff you can do without ever taking it off the phone, including sharing it. Now, of course, because I'm on a boat, I'm not going to have a lot of connectivity. So it may be that I can't get these pictures out to the world as fast as I'd like. But there's something fun about taking a trip and then sharing it with family, friends, and fans as you do it. Here's a... There's some great... Instagram is really fun. It's like Twitter for photography. I'll probably be sharing pictures on there. So I have a feeling that maybe I'll take more pictures with my iPhone than I will with the big fancy camera, the 5D Mark II. I did get a pocket camera. You know, it was a toss-up between the Canon S95, which just came out. It's very popular, very compact. It'll slip right in your breast pocket. I mean, it's tiny. Versus the Nikon P7000, the Coolpix 7000, which people are raving about. My friend Annie Yanatko just reviewed it for the Chicago Sun-Times, raved about it. Just said, this is the amazing camera. And really, he's getting great images with it. But it's a little bulkier. And then I was looking at the Panasonic Lumix. I have an LX3, which I've loved for a couple of years, and they just came out with the latest LX5. Well, I couldn't get the S95. It was back ordered, and I thought, I don't want to go on the trip without the pocket camera. So I got the LX5, and I'm pretty happy with that. So three cameras I'll have with me. A big one for the big, great picture. You know, you want every bit of the detail. I'll certainly take that to places like Antarctica or the penguin rookeries on Falkland Islands and Machu Picchu. But, you know, I'll also have the camera phone in my pocket for the instant snap. What is it they say? They say the best camera is the one you've got with you. And all three of them are good enough. We're going to get back to the phones in a second. And as I said, Chris Marquardt talking about some photography history in just a little bit. Before we do that, though, I do want to tell you that you ought to be backing up. You know that. I know you know that by now. It's one of those things when you tell people back up, they hit their head and they go, I know, I feel guilty. Don't feel guilty. I don't want you to feel guilty. I just want you to do it. Don't feel bad. Just go to Carbonite.com right now. PC or Mac, sign up today. The offer code is Leo. You'll get 2 weeks free. You can see how it works. Now, the thing I like about Carbonite, it's easy. Anyone can do it in seconds at Carbonite.com. It's automatic. You don't have to remember to back up. Your pictures and other files on your computer are backed up whenever you're online without slowing you down or your internet access. And this is something that I don't promote enough, I think. Carbonite lets you access those files anywhere, anytime, from any computer, even from an iPhone or with a BlackBerry app, free BlackBerry app or free iPhone app. So those, it's almost like you're sharing the files online that you can get them anytime, anywhere. Of course, you can encrypt them to make them private. And it's very affordable, $55 a year, 15 cents a day. And in fact, if you use my name Leo when you check out, you'll get two extra months free. Carbonite.com. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Carbonite.com. Don't forget to use the offer code Leo. Let's see. David's been hanging on a long time. Thanks for your patience, David, from St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, David.
Hi there, Leo. It's great to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you today?
I have a problem that has come up with Entourage, which is the Mac version, the older Mac version of Outlook before they had that change.
Oh, I remember it well.
I'm getting, I've got several email accounts, mostly with Google. I'm getting a warning now that says unable to establish a secure connection to Gmail, and it gives a thing because the server name or IP address does not match. And then it says if you continue, the information you view and send will be encrypted but will not be secure.
Well, yeah, what they mean is they can't match. So here's how, and this happens with surfing as well as email. Whenever you're using secure HTTP or HTTPS, you've seen those addresses, and Gmail uses that. The way that the security is assured is the site registers itself with a certificate authority, a CA. There are many companies that do this. Your browser has and your email program have in it a list of trusted certificate authorities. So ultimately, that certificate and that certificate authority have to match. And then the certificate has to match the address so that if you're going to https://gmail.com, the certificate has to match that. What you're seeing right now is Entourage saying, you know, the certificate doesn't match. It's working, but I just want to warn you. There's a mismatch. Is it a problem? Well, it could mean that somebody's trying to hijack your email, but 99 times out of 100 when this happens, it's some naming thing or some Entourage screwed up or it's going to the wrong address. I would look at your Entourage settings. I wouldn't panic, David. I don't think it's really a problem. It means there's a mismatch between the certificate Entourage is getting and the name of the server that you're on. So that's why if you go into your settings, make sure, you know, look at the Google instructions and make sure your settings, it actually has instructions for Entourage in Gmail. Make sure those settings match exactly. Just a slight difference in the name. It might still work, but the certificate may not match. Leo Laporte, and maybe Entourage isn't up to date. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to the phones and Jim in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
I am great. How are you?
It is a beautiful day in paradise, let me tell you.
Wait a minute. Dayton, Ohio?
Absolutely.
Is that where they've been hiding it?
It's we've got the one of the world's largest Air Force bases here, so we just kind of keep it in a hangar.
Now I know. Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad you're enjoying the day. I'm glad the spring has sprung early in Ohio.
Well, it's always lovely here.
Yeah.
First of all, I got to thank you because you and I talked a while ago about dual SIM cell phones, and
yes.
I had a choice between a Windows 6.1 and a Android, which was on Donut. And
yeah.
The Android on Donut had Edge, and you told me no, go with the Windows 6.1.
And I'm not crazy about either choice, frankly. But
you weren't crazy about either choice. I'll tell you what, I didn't listen, and I'm glad I didn't listen. I went with the Android phone, and I've got a MiFi, so I'm going perfect 3G right now, no issues at all.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a solution. So the MiFi card is a 3G receiving card.
Mm-hmm.
Verizon and Sprint both sell them. That then becomes a Wi-Fi access spot. So that phone, which can only do Edge, at least it has Wi-Fi built into it. So in effect, you're adding 3G to it with this external card.
Right. And I'm doing the Jeff Jarvis. I'm doing the Virgin Mobile bit. So it just
works. That's a good deal too. Unlimited for $40 a month. That's a great deal.
Perfect. Now, Leo, I put it up in the chat room. I'm not sure if you need to see it again. I'll post it again. I'm kind of curious why nobody's really given a lot of credit to Barnes and Noble with their Nook. Being able to, you know, root it and turn it into a regular Android device.
Wow, look at that. He's got a picture of our video on his Color Nook.
But
this requires hacking it. The Color Nook is an Android device, but it's hobbled so that it doesn't have the Android marketplace. You know, it's you can't do everything you'd like to do with it. But turns out it's not too hard.
The newest version, the Nookie Froyo that they've put out, that's the name of it. I didn't come up with it. you actually just burn everything to an SD card and pop it in the SD player. You don't even have to do any rooting at all. The system uploads everything off the SD card. You don't have
Now, let me ask you a question. But one of the issues with this, of course, would be the speed of the processor in that Nook.
Mm-hmm.
How fast is it?
You can almost, if you overclock, you can get it up to almost a gig. If you leave it alone, I believe its carriage is 800 megahertz.
Well, that's not bad. And if you can get it a little faster reliably,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty much like an Android tablet. It's like the Samsung Galaxy Tab.
And I'll tell you what, it was cheaper than a Samsung Galaxy Tab. I use it for pretty much everything that you could use a tab for and then some. I don't take my laptop out anymore. I use this thing, and I remote connect to my laptop, and it's perfect.
Basically, you've got an Android tablet here.
I've got an Android tablet, and with my MiFi with me, I can go anywhere in the U.S. and not have any issues at all.
How much is Barnes & Noble charging for the Color Nook?
$250.
$250?
But they're probably going to be less now. That was just right before Christmas. So
that's a really good price. Now, I think that's a great hack.
It's a great hack. It saves everybody some money. And if anybody wants more information, I can give you the web. I can give you the websites.
Yes, give me what is it, Froyo Nookie?
Nookie Froyo. And
Nookie.
The website to check it out is nookdevs, nookdevs.com.
You know, this is one of the things that's cool about Android. Because it's an open operating system, it's based on Linux, people understand it, and they can fairly easily modify it.
And just real quickly, Leo, I'm not a hacker by any shape of the imagination. I like programming. But I am by no means an expert when it comes to Linux. This was little to no work whatsoever.
As Warbuff is saying in the chat room, you the man. Well done, Jim. Thank you for sharing that with us. And I'm glad you had the good sense to ignore my advice and get an Android device, because I'll tell you, Windows 6.1 is pretty painful.
And it's Android is such a much better system now. So
it really is. Now, have you updated your donut version on that phone to a more recent version?
Are actually in the process of hacking it because the manufacturer is not supporting it as much as we would have liked. We're actually in the process right now. There's a lot of good people in the Android Spin forums that are hacking it to get it up to Froyo, and there's a chance that we might be able to push it to Eclair, but we don't think we can get it past.
Wow. Well, Froyo's Eclair's a little earlier than Froyo. It'd be not
Froyo, the next one, Honeycomb.
Right. Honeycomb. Right. Oh, all right. Well, you know, 2.2 is kind of the minimum for an Android device. That's Froyo. And if you can get it that far, it's probably pretty usable.
Right.
And I have to say, getting a Nook. By the way, this is not the black and white Nook. I want to underscore this. This is the color, full color Nook.
Don't please do not buy the black and white Nook. This does not work with the black and white Nook.
Yeah. This is the full color Nook. But I think the Nook's a very good e-reader. I was interested to see them do the color. How's the screen on that? Is it pretty good?
I put a Nook Color versus and a Galaxy Tab next to each other. I like the Nook Color better.
Wow.
A lot of people think that's crazy, but I put them next to each other. I honestly think the Nook Color's got a better display on it.
I'm gonna at $250. This is a worthwhile project. I'm gonna run out and get one and give it a shot. Because I think it's how big is the screen? It's not 7 inches, is it?
No. It's a 7-inch. Screen.
It is 7 inches. Okay.
It's not 1024x8. It's like. 10 by 860 or something crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's designed to be a book reader, not a Android tablet, but as it turns out, it makes a pretty good Android tablet.
Makes a fabulous Android tablet, and with Flash, you can pretty much do anything with it now.
There were some rumors that, in fact, Barnes & Noble was going to do this. They've denied those rumors since, but you never know. There's no reason not to, right?
Yeah, I think it's worth it. So
a little bit lower resolution than I would like, but still. Boy, at that price, a great deal. And no contract either.
No contract. And again, if you get the Virgin Mobile, then you're flying free and you can cancel it anytime.
Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
You are proof positive that sometimes it's best to ignore the Leo. Ronald, these are just suggestions, folks. They're not written in stone. Ronald, Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ronald.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm great. What can I do for you today?
Well, I'm a novice at this, and I have an HTC Evo 4 and an old Dell Dimension 2400.
Okay.
I want to hack my Evo so it can be a modem because I have a desktop. And also, I used to have DSL Extreme, which I loved greatly, but in the area I'm in, I'm no longer able to get it.
Right. It's the phone companies really don't like these independent ISPs. They really don't. So you want to know how you can use your Evo to do a hotspot for your Dell.
You got it, sir.
Yeah.
And on a desktop as opposed to a laptop.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing. Now, I think if right now, you don't have 2.2 on your Evo yet, do you?
No, I just purchased it a few months ago, so I have whatever it has.
Yeah, so I think that if they once they update it to 2.2, 2.2 has that hotspot feature in it. It may be why they're slow to update it. Wait a minute. No, I take it back. You do have a mobile hotspot. You just have to pay $30 a month for it.
How about $59 a month?
Oh, that's a little much.
Sites on the web, and I'm wondering if they're legitimate in the term of...
They are. So what you'll see is you will see... So the Evo does have 2.2. It does have the mobile hotspot. Sprint just charges you for it. But if you look around for rooting the Evo, and I'm sure you'll be able to find that quickly because you're a smart guy, those capabilities can be added for free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Never is never. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by my internet service provider, DSL Extreme, for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, GetNet, to get DSL Extreme. There's Chris Marquardt. He's dancing. Is that a Ewok? What is that you're dancing with there?
That's a Domokan, a Japanese character from the TV.
Oh, I see that all the time, and I don't know what they are. All right, that's a Domokan.
Yeah, check out Domo on the web.
D-O-M-O?
Yes.
Chris is the man behind a great podcast, if you're into photography, called Tips from the Top Floor. He also has his own professional photography workshops. You can find out about those and everything else at chrismarquardt.com. C-H-R-I-S.
Actually, discoverthetopfloor.com is a bit easier to find.
Yeah. Nobody can spell Marquardt.
Exactly.
You know what? If you go to techguylabs.com, we have a link to it all. But yeah, the workshops are at discoverthetopfloor.com.
Yep.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo. I brought you a little photography history lesson.
I see something over your right shoulder that looks kind of cool.
That one? Oh, no, wait. On this side, that's just an old large format camera. It's just me showing off I have one of those.
yeah, those are really expensive. Yeah.
No, I want to talk about the rangefinder. You know what a rangefinder is?
Well, yeah, because you know what? We were talking about these point-and-shoot cameras, and I chose the LX5, and it doesn't have a rangefinder. It doesn't have a look through the little window at the picture.
Exactly. A rangefinder, actually, there are rangefinder cameras. People probably know rangefinder and connect it with cameras. But a rangefinder is actually a small device. I have one here that was available before rangefinder cameras were available.
I'm confused. What you mean? You look through that at what you're going to take a picture of?
This thing has a little window that you look through, and it has two windows in the front and a little wheel that you turn. And you have two pictures that you kind of have to they overlay each other, two pictures of the same thing. And while you turn the wheel, they move towards each other. And once they register with each other, then on the little wheel, you can read how far away that thing is that you just focused on.
So that's when I say rangefinder, I'm really thinking of the viewfinder, the little glass thing on top of a camera. The rangefinder actually finds how far
things
are.
Finds the range.
The range.
And with older cameras, there were even rangefinders. Well, first of all, they were devices you could just attach to the camera because old cameras didn't have anything but the distance scale on the lens. Now, you could add a rangefinder, and then you would choose, or you would determine the distance on this little rangefinder device, look at the dial, read the distance, and then dial that in on the lens.
You know, lenses to this day have, on digital SLRs anyway, and I think on a lot of cameras, have the distance on the lens, you would set it by hand.
Right. So that's what we call an uncoupled rangefinder. Now, later, Leica and so on, they started adding coupled rangefinders, which means that the rangefinder device, that little thing that has these two overlaying pictures and helps you find the distance, that was coupled to the lens. So you would only turn one dial and it would automatically set the lens to the right distance. And that is really the development. The rangefinder itself is just a device to find the range.
We are so spoiled these days because our cameras do it all automatically without even thinking about it.
Most of them, yeah. And the rangefinder cameras that were pretty popular from, let's say, the 1930s to the 1970s, they were actually pretty much killed off by the digital, by the SLRs, and later, obviously, by the digital SLRs. But to this day, there's still one manufacturer who's producing one of the last digital rangefinders, and that is Leica, the M9.
Of course.
Very expensive camera.
Of course. So you're saying that the viewfinder on that M9 is actually a rangefinder. You focus the lens until something matches up, or
on the M9, I think it is. Yeah, there was another digital rangefinder produced by Epson in conjunction with I think they worked with Cosina, the Japanese manufacturer, the RD1, and that doesn't really exist anymore. They stopped development on that. There's one rangefinder-like camera, a similar concept, not exactly the same principle, but again with this viewfinder to the side of the camera in a digital form that will come out in March, which is the Fuji X100, which I'm getting pretty
excited. Is
there
some reason besides nostalgia that you might want one of these?
Absolutely. There are a few things with rangefinders that really appeal to, for example, street photographers. You have this viewfinder to the side of the camera. So first of all, the camera is not that barrier in between you and what you shoot. It's more to the side. That also leaves the other eye open, so you can virtually leave both eyes open and have a better overview of the scene. And in the actual viewfinder, you see more of the scene than the lens later will see.
See, I don't want that.
Well, what it helps
that's why
you
I like an SLR, because I'm seeing what the lens is seeing.
Well, most of the SLRs today show you less than what the lens
sees. Oh, really?
Sees. So what the rangefinder viewfinder does is, and you might remember this from some old ones, is the bright frame inside the viewfinder that gives you an approximation of where the actual picture will be. So what you can do is you can anticipate what's going to happen. Someone's walking into the scene. You will see that person walking in there before it actually is in the picture. So that gives you time to prepare for timing critical shots, for example. And that is very important in street photography. That is why the classical rangefinder camera used to be the camera for street photographers, and it still kind of is. So whatever manufacturers will come up with in the future, I usually get pretty excited about, especially when it's in the digital realm. And let's see what we'll see pretty soon. I'm hoping that Fuji's going to do something there with the X100. Supposed to be coming out in March is the first kind of competition to some of the Leica offerings. So
I'm just lucky I have.
It's hard to imagine if you grew up work. With a DSLR or with just a digital compact. But rangefinder is a concept that I'm a bit sad that it's mostly gone.
Now, what is that camera behind you? As long as we're talking about it, it's over his left shoulder. Format camera?
That's a 4x5-inch large format camera.
Is it digital or is it film?
No, it's all film. It's a 4x5-inch negative. That's you can scan some 200 megapixels out of that.
Wow.
And it's a different style of photography. And we could talk about this at another time. Absolutely. This is it's interesting, and it's a different style of working, a very different style of working.
Now, we are in
German,
the
global camera.
We are in the middle of an assignment, so recap this. These assignments, they're not competitions. They're not contests. It's just, really, frankly, an excuse to get you out there and taking pictures. And what should we be looking for this time?
This time, the assignment is Liquid. So if you want to participate, go to Flickr, flickr.com/groups/tech guy, and that page has the instructions on what to do, and you can still be there. It's not a competition, it's just a way
fun.
To get some of your images reviewed. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. We have, I think, over 7,000 members in that group. It's really grown dramatically. And people love participating in the assignment. So Liquid, do whatever you want with that word and try to make that into a picture of some sort.
Sounds great. Chris is at his own website, Chris Marquardt, chrismarquardt.com. Or just go to techguylabs.com and you could find Chris. And if you go to our Flickr group, and again, let me tell you how to do this. If you've got a Yahoo account, you've got a free Flickr account. If not, just create one, flickr.com. Then go to the group, search for Tech Guy, and join that group. It's free to do so. There's instructions on the assignment right there. There's mini assignments, too, that Orbit Gal gives you. It's a really the only way to get it better at photography is to take a lot of pictures. So this is just a way of doing that. It really helps to have an assignment.
Yep, it does.
Chris, great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk next week. And I hope you'll be part of we're going to do a photo podcast called Mostly Photos with Lisa Bettany. Mostly Lisa.
I'm all game for that.
All excited about that. I know Chris will be a part with it, along with all the other photographers that I know, some of the best photographers in the world. Thank you, Chris.
Sure.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. More of your calls coming up at 47 after the hour, just a few minutes from now. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is to save the day, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and the Giz Whiz. Hey, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine, too.
I'm a little punchy because it's almost the end of the show.
Yeah, I know. And you've been really
it's a long,
working.
Long, hard slog, yeah. Helping people with their technology. Let me tell you, it's a thankless
and going,
task.
Going on a trip. I don't think it was a good idea to do 60 hours straight on through. I know you had a lot of coffee, used that AeroPress, but I think you should have got a little break
I want some money from Aerobee because I think we've sold a lot of AeroPress. Folks, you know what this is? This is the coffee maker that Dick mentioned on the show a while back. I've talked about it. I love it. I use it. I got two, one for the home and one for the office. It's just a little plastic doohickey. Your Aerobee makes a Frisbee. Makes like a Frisbee.
Yeah,
coin.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they got them. Probably the owner's a coffee hound because it's weird. It's like a plunger, but it's got a filter. It gets you pressure.
It's like a French press that has instant cleanups.
That's what I like about it.
Made a way that you just put it over the garbage pail. And
it just makes one cup.
Yeah.
Which is
or
good.
Or two cups. Two cups if you don't like coffee too much.
But me, it's better.
Anyway, so that's the gadget of the day. So what do you want to talk about now?
No. That's an old gadget. What do you got for us today?
Okay. You're pretty good at saying names and you guessing what it is. Okay?
We call it Guess the Gadget.
Guess the Gadget. Okay. Slim scan. Slim.
Well,
not a
obvious.
Western, not a Western star.
Yeah.
Well, I remember Slim Scan. He was really
Slim Scan. Yeah. You used to talk like this. Hey, yeah, I'm Slim Scan. Get the sheep back in the barn. Slim Scan. I'm thinking it's a very thin scanner. I mean, I could be crazy, but that's what I would say.
Okay, crazy. Ta-da! You have gotten it right.
Well, that was a hard contest.
How slim is it?
Well, okay. It's a little thicker than a business card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. And the reason having it is business people have all those little receipts and you keep losing them. So the object here is every time you get a receipt, you take out the little slim scanner, and it can scan up to, I think the president of the company said, 800 to 900 scans on one charge.
So wait a minute. So this thing has its own memory. You don't plug it in. You just keep it in your wallet or your pocket.
You keep it in your wallet. You charge it before you go on your business trip. You can scan 800 to 900 receipts.
Wow.
When you get back to the hotel, you plug it into your computer. And then download all your receipts. If you have scanned business cards, it'll go through the business cards and put all the contact information in your Outlook or whatever you're using for contact info. And it's pretty neat. It's $120.
You know, it's not. It has a screen on it, so you can actually see what you've captured.
Tiny, tiny little postage stamp size. Screen, and it's going to be out in toward the end of February, so not too far away. It's made out of stainless steel. Unless you have one of those giant wallets that has everything in it, I think you're going to want to put this in your wallet. But I mean, it is credit card size.
It does scan in color, doesn't it? Because I'm looking at the screen,
yes,
it looks like it's
yes,
in color.
Yeah, it does scan in color, so it's pretty neat. It's pretty neat. And I was going to try and bring one of those to dinner, but the...
I would have stolen it.
Yeah. They said that, you know what, Dick? It turns out that it is Chinese New Year and going to be Chinese New Year for 2 weeks, and we wouldn't have scanners till February. And Lisa said, Dick, you don't have to scan receipts. I said, oh, Lisa, that's great. She said, we don't pay them, so why bother scanning them? So... I learned that too, so it was good.
Yeah, we saw that. I think you and I did this on the Gizmos. We saw this at CES.
At CES, exactly.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. Slim Scan from Plan On, right?
Plan On. Yeah, last year from Plan On, they also make a Bluetooth scanner where you can scan from a device into a Bluetooth. You can use the device to scan to a Bluetooth printer. So they do all kinds of scanning, printing things.
Awesome. All right, we're going to tell people how they can get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine in just a little bit and wrap this puppy up. But first, a word, as they say, a word from our sponsors. Have you ever left a laptop on a park bench? Something like 300,000 laptops are left behind in airports every year. I mean, it's a huge number. People lose their laptops. And think of what's on that laptop, all the precious stuff, your pictures, your financial records, your documents, your data. Or maybe you got a virus or a hard drive crash. I mean, that's why backup's so important. And if you're going to back up, you need to know three things. Carbonite, online, backup. Carbonite's easy. You can get started right now at carbonite.com. Just use my name, Leo. Carbonite is automatic. Your pictures will be backed up whenever you're online and your other important files. And Carbonite, and this is, I don't talk about this enough, gives you anywhere, anytime access to that data. You don't have to wait till disaster strikes by logging into your Carbonite account or using their free smartphone apps. So get Carbonite today before you need it, because afterwards it's too late. Go to unlimited backup for your PC or Mac, just $55 a year at Carbonite.com. Your 15-day free trial starts at Carbonite.com when you use the offer code Leo if you decide to buy 2 months free. Get back it up to get it back at Carbonite.com. Offer code Leo. Dick D. Bartolo is here. He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We talk to him every week at this time. And Dick and I also do a podcast every weekday. We call it the Daily Gizwiz. You can listen to that. It's all about gadgets. You know, it's just a gadget a day and some silliness, some fooling around. Actually,
oh, when did that start?
Pretty much the whole show, frankly.
Yes, exactly. I think from day one. Yeah. No, actually, day one, it was pretty serious. I went back and listened to that like 3 years ago. It was, you know what? I think it was a plan on device. It was DocuPen. And I'm not sure if DocuPen
they
was
do DocuPen. Oh.
Oh, okay,
Was that our first device?
Yes, and it was 7 minutes. And I was still calling you Mr. Laporte.
Yes, but I liked it when you were a little more reverent.
Oh, yeah. No, it was, you know.
You've become far too irreverent.
Netcast 900, you said, Dick, you could call me Leo.
you call me Sir. Yes.
Sir Leo.
Call me Sir Leo. Sir. So, Dick, we do the podcast, and then he puts the notes for each of the gadgets he mentions on his website, and I want you to visit that site. It's Gizwiz, GIZWIZ.biz. You'll see a crazy picture of Dick glowing on the front page there.
That's with my Panta glasses.
You can read
about the PantaVision hat.
The hat. You'll see all the things he talks about and the notes and so forth. But then the reason I'm pointing you to this site, besides that, is you'll also see on the menu bar there, what the heck is it?
Yes.
This is his game, which is almost done now. Actually, it's starting to it'll wrap up at the end of the month.
At the end of February.
Yeah, what the heck is it? And the what the heck is it contest, he gives you a close-up picture of something.
A real gadget?
That's real. That's not fake.
Not fake. And it's the whole gadget. You know, people sometimes go, well, is that a part of something? No, it's a whole gadget. And you can guess what it really does, or better yet, something stupid that it might do. And we give 12 autographed mads for the if you get it what it really does correct. And we give 24 autographed mads for dumb, stupid, cute answers that make us chuckle.
Now, let me explain.
Or guffaw, either way.
One person doesn't win 24 magazines. 24 individual winners. 12 individual winners. Each win one autographed magazine.
That's correct.
Hey, you know, when it comes to contest, Dick, it's very important to explain the rules.
No, you're absolutely right.
Because somebody's going to say, where are my 24 Mad magazines?
Yes. You always see that in ads. It always kills me when it says, this iPod stand is just $3. And then underneath it says, iPod not included. $3, and I don't even get the iPod.
You have to, because it's in the picture. People can say, look at that. That's a great deal. So I'm looking at the current What the Heck Is It contest, and it looks like the Seattle Space Needle, but I'm not going to say that, because what if it is?
No.
Or a cribbage peg.
I cannot.
All right, just go to GizWiz.biz, play the What the Heck Is It contest. You have till the end of the month. The top 12 correct answers, the top 24 cute answers each get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, all the details, contest rules, et cetera, at GizWiz.biz.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TheGizWiz, and I can tell you about my ABC News appearances and stuff like that.
Dick, we'll see you next week, everybody. I will see you in the next show. Thank you so much for being here. All of our stuff we talk about is available online on the website, the Tech Guy Labs site, techguylabs.com. com. When you're there, you can also join the chat room. And by the way, the chat room continues even after the radio show. I was in there the other night, middle of the night, 500 people in there, chatting away like crazy. They didn't believe it was me. I said, no, it's me. And they said, prove it. And I said, I know Dick DiBartolo. Tech Guy Labs, I'll see y'all later.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888.
The music ran out, did it? Oh, I'm sorry. 8888, ask Leo. I just want to see how long it'd go for. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Like to scare Luis. Luis Oliveira on the board there. Gina Salvati answering the phones. Luis is going, let's get back to the phones. Kashika, Southern California. Hi, Kashika. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. It's Kashka, actually.
Hi, Kashka. There's an I in there, but I'll leave it out.
That's okay. Hey, I have two quick questions for you. First, my laptop took a major dump. Luckily enough, it's on Carbonite, which it's still backing up after 3 days. But I was wondering, is there a place that you can send a hard drive just in case I didn't get it all on Carbonite to have them recover it? Because it could only recover part of it.
Yeah, it kind of depends what went wrong. You don't know that probably.
No, because the motherboard and the hard drive went out at the same time.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know. It was a big mess.
How do you know the hard drive went out?
Because they can't pull data off of it. That's what
you brought it to the Apple store or somebody like that?
No, I brought it to, like, you know, a tech service place. But I saved
the motherboard.
No, they didn't. I bought a whole new computer. I just pulled the hard drive from that old computer so that way I would have it. In case I could recover it, but I'm hoping it's all on Carbonite. But I was just wondering if there's a place you can send it to and say, look at my hard drive. Can you fix it?
Yeah, there is. Depends on what's wrong with it.
Okay.
There are two different kinds of hard drive failures. There's soft and hard failures. If it's a hard failure, in other words, the physical media is grotesquely damaged or the head got bent or there's a circuit board blown.
I don't think so, because before it completely crashed out on me, I did do a BIOS run on it, and it said the hard drive was fine, a hard drive scan.
Okay, well, that's good. That means at least it could, you know, if there's a physical problem with it, it wouldn't even see it. So that's a good sign. In that case, so just to finish the thought, if there's a hard error like that, yeah, you go to a place like Drive Savers. The way they fix it is they've got a clean room and guys in bunny suits, and they carefully disassemble it. They've got all the different hard drives and lots of different parts, and they kind of take the platters out very carefully, put it in a new hard drive. It costs thousands of dollars.
Right. I don't want to do that. I can buy.
You don't want to do that, and it's not worth it.
Yeah,
probably not worth it. So if it's just a soft error, yeah. Now the problem is it's a Mac, right?
No, it's a HP.
Oh, I thought you said it was a Mac. It's
no.
A PC. Oh, this is easy.
PC, yeah.
So if anybody who's sophisticated in the least, and that means any computer repair shop, you could probably even do it. You need to put it in another computer and scan it. Now, the first thing I'd scan it with is a thing called SpinRite. What we're going to try to do is we're going to work our way up through the problems that a hard drive could have, starting with the lowest level problem, which is bad sectors.
Right. It is a laptop hard drive.
Doesn't matter. You'll have to get a laptop mounting kit because the connectors are different. But you can mount it in a PC.
Okay.
They sell inexpensively laptop mounting kits. You put it in there. In fact, this is why you take it to a repair shop. because they'll have all that stuff. They put it in there. They run SpinRite on it, and it'll say it'll go through the drive. Then this could take days looking for bad sectors, moving data off of bad sectors. If the error is a very low-level error, that'll fix it, and drive could be as good as new.
Okay.
If the error is not at that level, but is in fact at the file system, then they'll have to run file system recovery tools.
Yeah, well, they tried to recover some of it, and I'm hoping they didn't get all of it. They backed up some of it for me, but I'm hoping most of it went on Carbonite. I do have one other quick question, and this is about the future. And I have three little boys I'm homeschooling, 5, 7, and 2. And I'm trying to decide how I'm going to introduce them to computers. Should I go,
you know,
iPad?
Got plenty of time, first of all. Don't rush. An iPad would be good for that age, yeah.
Because, I don't want to rush them because they're going to be on them for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. And just imagine how have computers changed in the last 10 years for you. Well,
exactly.
When they're 10 years from now, when the oldest is getting out of high school, 10 years from now, who knows what they're going to be like?
Exactly, because I ran AutoCAD, 20 years ago, so that's
right.
I know a little bit about what happens with computers.
I think the most important thing you could do at this point, there's a few things that I would do. They're very young, so an iPad, just the first thing is just get them so that they're comfortable with it, so that it's not a scary, strange thing, and an iPad would be a perfectly good way to do that.
Okay.
Then the next thing that you want to do is get them comfortable with the Internet, because the Internet will certainly be around. So learning how to search, learning how to find things, learning how to navigate their way through Internet content. If you're homeschooling, you're probably going to do that anyway because it's such a great resource for you. It's one of the reasons it's easier to homeschool now is because we all have a library on our computer. We have every bit of information you could ever want is right there. So that makes it, I would think, considerably easier to homeschool. So you're going to be doing that. The most important thing you could teach a kid, and this won't be until starting probably in 6th or 7th or 8th grade, is critical thinking. The ability to look at information on the net and ask questions like, is this true? Is this who's saying it? Are they reliable? Are they trustworthy? Am I going to believe it? How do I find contrary opinions? Because this is something that my generation didn't learn so much. If it was in the New York Times, it was true. If Walter Cronkite said it, it was true because he was the voice of America. And you believed it because it was mainstream media. Well, I think we've learned, certainly since the Watergate era, since Vietnam, we've learned that maybe mainstream media isn't always right. And their generation is going to be getting information from thousands of sources, some of them good, some of them not so good, and they need to be able to make the distinction. They need to know how to use the Internet, how to navigate it, how to find information, but most importantly, how to value that information. So that's something, but you won't be teaching them that for another 5 or 6 years. But soon, that's going to be the most important skill that they could learn. They'll be comfortable with technology. It's all around them. They live with it. And who knows what it's going to look like in 10 years? It's probably not going to look anything like it looks today. So getting them comfortable with the general idea is great. I also think media literacy, both in terms of how to consume it but also how to create it, is important. You give them a camcorder or a digital camera. Get them used to the idea of editing video, of making audio, of creating, of writing blogs, of creating a website. These are good tools for anybody to learn, but especially for kids coming up. I think that's a great thing. So information literacy, both in consuming and creating content. You got some time there. Seven years old is the oldest. That you still have some time. But I think that's great, Kashka, that you're doing that. Wonderful. Good time to start. Natalie, Los Angeles, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Natalie. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Natalie!
I hear you. I hear her wrestling around. Maybe she doesn't hear me. I'm going to put you on hold and we'll see if we can get you awake. How about Bob in Anthem, Arizona? Hi, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how you doing?
So well. How are you?
Good. I just want to say it was great to meet you at CES.
Oh, great. I'm glad we met.
You know my brother, David. He lives in Carpinteria.
I do.
Yes. I do have a technical question for you.
Okay.
And that is, my home network consists of a Linksys RVS 4000 router, and that gives out my DHCP. But then I have a time capsule, and I have two additional AirPort Extremes running in.
Wow.
It's overkill, but I had the equipment, and what I...
Why not? What the heck?
Yeah. What I've done was, because the way the house is laid out...
I'll tell you what, hang on, because we've got to take a break, but we'll complete the thought and answer the question in just a minute. Can you do that?
Sure.
Thanks, Bob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lots of calls on the board here. Let me get some answers to some of these questions, starting with Carl in New York. He's been waiting the longest. Hi, Carl. Leo Laporte here.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show. Where in New York?
Long Island.
I'm going to be out your way tomorrow. I'm taking an overnight flight to do Regis and Kelly.
Cool. I'll be watching.
Wave at me as I fly over. Actually, I'll be in Long Island because that's where JFK is. What can I do for you, Carl?
So I have a question about the TriCaster program.
Ah, yes. So let me explain what that is for people who are saying, what is he talking about? It's not a program you run on your computer. It's actually hardware and software you buy from a company called Newtek, N-E-W-T-E-K, that lets you do a television show.
Yeah, so my question is there any programs like it? Like Wirecast?
Yes. Yes, there's Wirecast. You named one of them. Boinks has a program, B-O-I-N-X, that does something similar. So you could take an existing computer. You see, the problem with the Newtek is it's very expensive. It includes a computer, software, and hardware bundle. It's what I use, and one of the reasons I use it is because when you get all three together, you get better performance, but you have to have some money to spend.
Yeah.
So there's a company called Boinks, B-O-I-N-X.com, that has Boinks TV. VidBlaster is another good choice. And you mentioned Wirecast. All three of those are software solutions. Now, in order to get... the main feature of all of this is the ability to have multiple cameras that you can switch between for a video show. And in order to get multiple cameras on an existing stock computer, you'll have to have multiple USB and FireWire ports. You might have to get some hardware in there. But if you've got the hardware, these are good solutions. My friend Brian Brushwood, who's going to be here in a few minutes, actually, he hosts a show on my network called NSFW, and he does it with a VidBlaster and does a very, very good job.
And I got another question for you.
Sure.
I want to know how you advertise for a website.
You come on the Tech Guy radio show.
Seeks,
and you tell people what that website is. What is that website, Carl?
TechGoneTooBad.com.
TechGoneTooBad?
Yep, .com.
I like the name. What do you do on TechGoneTooBad?
Well, we talk about tech stuff and we just talk about tech with teams.
TECHGONE, the number two or letters? TECHGONE, the number two, BAD. And is it a video show or is it audio and video?
Audio and video. Sometimes the podcast is on iTunes too.
So you could also search for it on iTunes.
Yep.
Well, congratulations! It sounds like you're doing a great job.
And I designed it when I was like 14.
How old are you now?
15.
Carl, well done. So you do prank calls, huh? Oh, you really have gone to bed, aren't you? You're on the dark side of all this, aren't you?
Yep.
and by the way, just be careful because in some jurisdictions, what you're doing may be illegal. I have no idea. I just don't want you to get in trouble, Carl. And I see there's a button on there that you can request a prank call. You are brave to do this. This is a grand old tradition, I must say. A grand old tradition of comedy, the prank call. In fact, doesn't... what was it, Funny People, the Adam Sandler movie, which was a great movie? Doesn't it begin with old video footage of Adam Sandler doing prank calls back when he was unknown and unfamous, but hung out with all his comic friends? Congratulations, I guess. Good luck, Carl. Dave Binghamton, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking the call, and hopefully we're not as cold up here tonight as it's going to be down in Antarctica for you.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm coming to town soon. What is there snow on the ground in Binghamton?
Oh, yeah, definitely snow. And it's gonna...
Oh, of course there is.
It's -1 tonight, so.
-1, that's great. Oh, boy. I was thinking of going up upstate to visit my daughter. She's going to school up that way, but maybe not.
Yeah, not that bad down that way, I don't believe.
Okay, I hope not.
Exactly, and I actually don't know how to segue this part in, but I just wanted to mention also I sold something on Amazon to some guy in Petaluma, and the only thing that came to mind was Twit.
That's right. That's the little town in Northern California where I broadcast from. It's called Petaluma, and it's our goal. You know, Petaluma was famous for many years for being the wrist wrestling capital of the world. I'm hoping to bring it back into prominence.
To me, it's this week's capital.
Thank you, Dave. What can I do for you today?
Well, my question is in regards to my MacBook Pro. It's had some issues recently. It's about 4 years old. It's a 2006, I believe. And the MagSafe adapter, or AC adapter, the light seems to dim every so often. And I unplug it, plug it back in, and it goes back to full brightness. The other issue that just happened, like this has been going on for about a month, month and a half, but today it just automatically, or it just went off. The computer turned off by itself.
Well, it sounds like it may not be charged. That happens when it's not fully charged. It will protect itself by shutting down.
Right, well,
I'm wondering if that, I'm hoping that it's not the actual connector on the computer itself that's going bad, but the cord, you know, the power supply.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping, but being that it was, when it did this, it was at first plugged in, so I unplugged it, I turned it back on, and it turned off by itself again without it being plugged in. Right after it came up to the startup items, it then turned off.
Yeah, but have you looked at the battery? Is it fully charged? You press the button on the battery to see if it's...
Yeah, the battery...
It says it's fully charged?
Yes, well, right now it's at 94%, and it's charging right now.
Okay, so that's not good.
So it is staying on this time around, but I'm not sure if I need to get a new one or hopefully don't have to get it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little, you know, I would say it was the cord, except now you're telling that extra little bit that it's shut down even when the battery was fully charged.
Right.
And I'm not sure what that is, and I don't really know of an easy way to fix these things. Apple pretty much swaps parts. They're not exactly they act as if they can't really service anything.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a motherboard problem, but again, a new logic board for a Mac laptop is going to cost almost as much as a new laptop.
That's very true, and I don't know. What do you think of like MacOfAllTrades.com? Because I was looking at
I don't know them, but I do have to say that when I've had problems like this in the past, of course, if you go to Apple, you're going to get the most expensive repair. You're going to get the new logic board or the complete swap. If you can find a good Apple repair shop that's not, you know, that's kind of willing to try to fix things instead of swap them out, you might luck out. It may just be a broken solder. You know, it may just be something simple that they can easily fix. I've had that happen. Not lately, but I have had that happen. The problem is that Apple has pretty much killed the ecosystem of non-Apple repair by doing its Apple retail stores. You know, all the there used to be a lot of third-party Apple stores, you know, Apple resellers and so forth.
Yeah, we do have a private shop that does do it. They don't do warranty work, but they will do laptops.
How old is the laptop?
It's about 4 years old. It's an 06.
Yeah, you wouldn't be worth getting Apple to repair it. It would cost you more than getting a new one. So I would, in fact, you know, understanding that you're running the risk that you're going to have to get a new one anyway, it's kind of the last ditch. I'd bring it into that non-warranty repair shop and let them give it a shot. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This portion of the Tech Guy Show is brought to you by Carbonite. It's backup done right. Oh, it's so nice. It's such a nice feeling when you got that Carbonite backup and you just know I'm safe. No matter what happens, I got my data. Try it free right now for 15 days. Just go to Carbonite.com and use the offer code Leo for Windows or Mac. Carbonite. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. My phone number is 888-827-5536. That's easier to remember if you just say 888-ASK-LEO. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., and we had a call from Israel a little while ago. You can call via Skype. Just use Skype out to that toll-free number, plus 1-888-ASK-LEO. Lee is in Santa Monica, California. Our next caller, listening to the great KFI, the mothership. Hey, Lee.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
I want to purchase a digital recorder and player for the TV, a DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean like a good price.
You mean like a DVR, like digital video recorder, or what do you want to record to, a hard drive or a DVD?
Probably to a DVD.
I like Panasonic makes some very nice ones. Humax, H-U-M-A-X, kind of a name a lot of people don't know, makes one that has TiVo built in. I love TiVo. I'm a TiVo fan. So it has the TiVo capability, has a hard drive in it, but also has a DVD burner in it, which is a great combination. So you can record, you know, you want to record the football game, you record it. You want to save it for posterity, you can burn it to a DVD and you've got it. So that's a good combination. Panasonic, good brand. They make a number of these. They're very good. But Humax, if you can find it, H-U-M-A-X, because they have TiVo software, which I think is fantastic. Bob in Ohio, you're next. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo, how's it going?
It's going great. Welcome.
Hey, I just purchased a video projector and... looking, of course, it needs to be calibrated, and
And Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, will tell you this: that if you're getting a nice TV, a good HD TV, get it calibrated. It's a few hundred bucks, but it will be much more accurate than if you just take the existing settings and accept them. Now, he says that I have yet to do it, so you know I live with it, and it looks fine to me. Maybe he's a little bit more of a perfectionist than I am.
Well, I guess when you're going from a 50-inch television to a 106-inch screen, it makes a big difference.
Yeah, the bigger the screen, the more defects you'll see. You know, one thing for sure, and I don't know if this is true of projectors, but certainly DirectView displays will come out of the box set usually to something called dynamic, or they have different names for it, but really what it's intended for is the showroom floor. They're extra bright, extra pop, and it's not what you want in your living room. But what's funny is if you've left it on that, you'll be used to it. And then if you set to movie or, another mode, you have three or four modes in the TV, and they're on the remote. And you'll say, oh, boy, movie looks just so boring and dark. Well, that's how it's supposed to be. And once your eyes get used to it, it will be better. So the first thing I would do is make sure it's not set on dynamic, but have it set on movie. And usually that'll give you a better result. What a calibrator will do is they'll come in and they'll fine-tune it. Not all sets can be fine-tuned, but if it can be, they'll come in, they'll fine-tune it. Often they'll use machinery to test color reproduction and see if you're getting the colors you expect. Especially on a projector, this would be important because it's impacted by your screen, how far away it's from the screen, the ambient light. So even more than a direct view, a projector probably could benefit a lot.
Sure. I ended up getting the BenQ 6000, and it's not your what you call your higher end, but it's one of the brightest projectors that are out.
Yeah. BenQ's the old Acer,
yep.
I think they make some great hardware. I haven't seen their projection displays, but I think people have forgotten about projectors, and it's really the best way to get a really big screen. It's certainly the only affordable way for most people to get a really big screen.
I've been researching them for several years. I've been wanting to finish my home theater in regards to putting a nice, good-sized picture on the wall instead of listen to great sound with a 40-inch television.
Now, one thing I would do that maybe is more important than getting a calibrator is getting a screen. You're not projecting it on a painted wall, are you?
No, I already got a screen for it.
Good, good. A screen will make a difference. And Scott's also told us about there's paint you can buy. It has crystals in it that actually reflect the light from the projector that are much more like movie screens. Either way, you definitely don't want to project against a flat white wall.
Oh,
a lot of people do that. If you were doing that, I'd say before you get a calibrator, do at least get a screen.
Well, I did purchase it before I got a screen just to make sure in regards to the size and the wall and everything like that.
Good.
And once I figured that out, went ahead and bought a screen. I even talked to BenQ and the people I bought it from.
Good.
In regards to what the best screen would be for that.
Is it a DLP projector?
Yes, it's DLP.
Well, you're probably getting a very, you know, that's, I'm not surprised because that's the brightest probably. You're probably getting a very nice picture.
Yeah, it is a good picture. BenQ isn't known. I did some reading on it, and they're not known for having the best picture out of the box. But once it's calibrated, it's a really good picture.
Well, if price, you know, budget is an issue, budget consideration is an issue. There is a DVD called DV Essentials. They make it in both DVD and Blu-ray. Digital Video Essentials, or DVE, that you could buy. Amazon sells it. Joe Kane made it, who was one of the kings of this. And it will get you a good deal of the way to a calibrated set. It's a good thing to have anyway. Digital Video Essentials is $22 on Amazon. So that would be the first place to go. And then, you know, you can hire people who do this. There are a couple of different certifications. You want somebody who's certified. He's not just making it up. He knows what he's doing. He's been trained. I think Dolby is one of the certifications. You know, Scott Wilkinson went through a certification, I think, at either Dolby or THX. So there is a certification process, and I would look for somebody who is certified. ISF, that's the other one.
Yeah, that's
ISF.
That was one of my questions. I was wondering if there was a big difference in between purchasing software for calibrating or getting a professional to come out and do it.
Yeah. Well, professional have some additional hardware. The DVD is using your eyes. The professional will have some hardware. He'll know a little bit more. So THX or ISF, maybe Dolby as well. Make sure they're certified. I think that they can do a pretty good job at getting it. Well, they'll optimize it. Let's put it that way. Have you noted? Are you saying that you don't like what you're seeing, Bob, or you just want to make sure you're getting the best?
Well, that's it right now. I haven't actually calibrated yet. I've kind of adjust it like you would a regular television.
Right. Like I said, I haven't done it either. I did get the Digital Video Essentials disc from Joe Kane, and I ran through that. And that, to me, it looks fine. It looks good. In fact, I love how it looks. And I don't want a calibrator coming in and telling me, oh, no, your blues are too blue, your reds are too red, and what the heck is that green thing? You know, and they'll adjust it. That's, you know, I don't have golden eyes. It looks good to me. You're looking for it to be natural, to be real, to be like the movie looked in the theater. And I think with DVE, you can get really close. That's probably what I would recommend. And, you know, there are places consultants will do this without an install. But a lot of times you have to get, a full install. And that's pretty expensive. By the way, the Humax, people have been asking about that Humax. It is available from my friends at Weakneez, WEAKNEES.com. That's the TiVo Plus DVD recorder that we were talking about. Weakneez.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. We only have a few more minutes, though, so you know what? Save that for next week. We're running out of time here. Let's go to John in Sarasota, Florida. Hi, John. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. How you doing? Thanks for the show.
Thanks for listening. What can I do for you?
I got a fifth generation iPod 8 gig, and I can't restore it. When I go to the correct site, the Apple site, iTunes, etc., it starts the process, and it tells me that there are some files missing, and then it backtracks.
Oh. Interesting. Files missing for the restore.
It doesn't say. It just says files missing. I don't know. Huh. My
system. That doesn't sound like there's anything wrong with the iPod. It sounds like there's something wrong with iTunes.
Okay, well, I've got the latest 1.0, I think it is, and I've downloaded that twice.
Of iTunes? You're on Windows, aren't you?
Windows XP, and yes.
Yeah, I have to say that iTunes on Windows is always an adventure.
Right.
Always an adventure. So you've got iTunes, not one, but iTunes 10, I hope.
The very latest.
Yeah, the very latest. But when it restores, it's restoring from the firmware files that are stored in iTunes, and it sounds like that those got damaged or corrupted or something is messed up. One way you could, well, let's see, how are we going to do this? You know, it's an iPod Nano, 8 gigabytes.
Yes, fifth generation. It's got the little movie camera on the back.
Yeah. I'm thinking what would be the best process here.
Okay.
So what it does, what a restore does is it has, iTunes has stored the firmware that you're going to replace.
Right.
And what I'm guessing is when it says it can't find a file, that's the file it can't find. Now, iTunes isn't responding properly. It should. What it should do is say, I don't have it. Let me get it, download it, and then do the install. Does it attempt to download it?
Yes, it gets all the way, and then it says file's missing, and then it backtracks what it's done. It's sort of like...
Aha. Uh-huh. So is it attempting to download a file from the Internet?
I don't know. Is the honest
story. Yeah, I'm almost certain that iTunes is screwed up. I'll give you a kind of the default fix for iTunes on Windows. First, uninstall it. In fact, uninstall all Apple software. So at least uninstall it and QuickTime.
Right.
Just, you know, get rid of it. Then you're going to download QuickTime by itself first. You go to apple.com/QuickTime and get QuickTime for Windows and just download that by itself. Often, when you normally get iTunes, it installs both, and sometimes that QuickTime install fails. So let's just do the QuickTime first, then download the latest version of iTunes directly and reinstall it. It'll say, oh, I see you have QuickTime. I don't need to install that. Have you already done all that?
No, I haven't. I have actually uninstalled it, and then I get a window with two little boxes. It says completely remove or reinstall correcting files, and I've done that.
Yeah, completely remove it.
Okay.
Completely remove it, and then try the restore. And then the other thing that sometimes happens is you need to do a DFU, which is a very hard restore on the iPod. It's a more serious restore than just reinstalling the firmware, and that will perhaps. I don't think that that's the issue. I don't think there's anything wrong with your iPod. I think it's actually iTunes doesn't have the software it's trying to install.
Right. Okay, so completely uninstall QuickTime and iTunes, then just install QuickTime on its own.
Then install
iTunes on its own.
Yes. And then try it, and if it doesn't, then you're going to want to do a DFU. The other thing you can do, and Apple's pretty good about this, if you've got an Apple store nearby, make an appointment at the Genius Bar. Bring it in, and they can do it too.
Okay, one other thing. Thank you very much for that. Internet Explorer, are you suggesting Google Chrome instead for the browser?
Yeah, I'm not fond of Internet Explorer. And, you know, when she was telling me earlier that she was getting all these pop-ups, it told me that she's not only using Internet Explorer, but she's using an old version of it. Because the new version, IE 8, blocks pop-ups. So it's a clue to me that she's using probably Internet Explorer 6, which was a security nightmare.
Yeah.
If you're using IE8, if you're using the latest version, you're probably fine. I mean, Microsoft's done a good job with that. I happen to prefer Firefox and Chrome. It's certainly not, there's no harm to having additional browsers. Use the one you like the best. But whatever you do, don't use IE6. That's the real advice there.
Okay, thank you. And just going back to the iPod for a quick second, would one of the problems be I'm trying to import non-iTunes music into iTunes? Would I have screwed anything up there?
No, that shouldn't do it at all.
All right.
I think that for some reason that firmware is missing, and I think a reinstall should bring it back. There will be a download. You will have to download the latest firmware from Apple when you do that. And you'll be going to whatever the current version is. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
4.2.1.
A button there that you click to, it says get the latest firmware.
Yeah.
Mine's up to date.
Oh, it does. Okay, well, so it's saying I'm not going to download it. You already have it. But then it says, but wait a minute, it's something's missing here. I think that's what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. I think there's something there. The reinstalling should kind of reset iTunes to say, hey, you need it, download it. And then let's hope you get a clean download then and you can install. And thanks for the call. Appreciate it, John. We're going to get back to the phones in just a second. I think David's coming up from Long Island, and next will be Bob, who wants to do a dual boot. More than one operating system on the same computer. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Before we get there, though, let me tell you, every Sunday you should be thinking this back up. While you're listening to the show, be backing up. Now, I say that unless you're using Carbonite, because if you're using Carbonite, I know you're always backing up. That's one of the reasons I love Carbonite. Things go bad in computers. You've known that. If you listen to the show, you absolutely know it. Today could be that day that you get a worm or your hard drive dies or maybe you drop your laptop or it gets lost or stolen and all your data goes with it. What's on that computer? Now think, just a little mind experiment. Great photos that you would have no way to recover, perhaps financial records, emails. There's a lot on there now. Our computers are our lives. You got to have a backup. And the best backup is automatic. Happens automatically whenever you're online. It's easy. Carbonite.com, so easy, anybody could use it. And here's the best part. Anywhere, anytime, you can always access your files by logging into your Carbonite account on any computer, even with the free iPhone or BlackBerry app. I want you to try Carbonite free for the next 15 days. Go to Carbonite.com, use the offer code Leo. Carbonite.com, offer code Leo. And if you decide to buy, it's only $55 a year, and you'll get 2 additional months free when you use my name Leo on checkout. Carbonite. It's backup done right for Mac or PC. Please do me a favor. I don't want to get that call from you in tears saying, I've lost everything. Just use Carbonite. Really? Really? It'll be okay. I promise. Bob in Southern California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm on a dual boot. I have Win7. 64-bit.
Okay. What do you want to? What is the second operating system you want to install?
I want to go with XP 32-bit.
Okay. The easiest way to do that is to start with XP because, of course, XP, if you put an installer disk in now, will look at Windows 7 and say, I don't know what that is. It's an operating system from the future. I don't know how to do that. On the other hand, when you have currently installed an older version of XP, and you install Windows 7, Windows 7 knows about XP. You'll say, oh, I see you already have Windows 7 or Windows XP. Would you like me to install on top of it, or would you like to make a two-boot system? That's the easiest way to do it. But you don't want to uninstall 7. You want to do it. So the first thing you're going to have to do is partition the drive. Actually, there's something even easier.
I have two drives, Leo.
Okay. You have two drives. That's fine. You could run it in a virtual machine. If you don't need a lot of performance out of XP, if you just want to run it one or two XP programs that don't work in 7, then I would say go to virtualbox.org and get a copy of that. It's free, and then or VMware. Microsoft even has Virtual PC for free, and you could then run an instance of Windows XP under Windows 7. That's a lot easier.
Okay,
but if you need all the performance, if you want to say, when I'm in XP, I want to own that box, then the way to do it is to install XP on that second drive. It's going to screw up the master boot record of Windows 7. So you'll then have to go back and either reinstall 7, and actually it's just a fix at this point. It's not a full install to fix the master boot record, or use a boot manager to fix the master boot record and create a dual boot system. It's a little tricky going from 7 to XP because XP is going to clobber the boot record. It's going to say, I don't know what this Windows 7 is, but I want the whole machine for myself. Actually, the Windows 7 Pro you have also has XP mode. That might be another way to do it. That's a virtual machine as well. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you next week. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy.